I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Sans Pants Radio, Australia's most cowardly podcast network.
Hello and welcome to Scaredy Boys, a podcast where three cowardly friends discuss horror movies. I'm Damien.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Tom.
And for this episode, we watched A Quiet Place. A Quiet Place is a 2018 horror film directed by John Krasinski and written by Brian Woods and Scott Beck. It follows the Abbott family, who are forced to live in silence while hiding from monsters with ultra-sensitive hearing. In this post-apocalyptic world, all it takes is one noise for everything to go wrong.
It's a pretty good movie, boys.
Yeah, it's real fucking good.
Really
boys,
good.
You're too fucking loud. Please. Great premise. How often do we watch a film and we go, oh, the premise is really good. It didn't really work. This is like great premise and like nearly perfect execution.
Yeah. That was literally the first note I took on watching this, and it was a rewatch. This is probably the first rewatch I think I've ever had.
I was
going to
say, this is one of your few rewatches.
Yeah, which is quite exciting. But yeah, my first note was like, the concept is literally perfect, but without the right story to hang it on, it could have been utter garbage. Like, that's what you're saying. We've seen this before, where you've had a great concept, but the story itself. And I like, even for my own writing, I've kind of learned this where I'll have a great idea for a story, whether it's got a supernatural, fantasy, sci-fi element. And the idea is really exciting. And then I'm like, but Damo, what actually takes place? And I've got no fucking idea. Like, I don't know what the story is yet.
Yeah. They've kind of, like, it's a high concept idea.
Mm.
And then this, you could have spun this 1,000 different ways. So it just depends what you choose to focus on. And I think it's great that they just picked a single family living on a farm. That's just great. To me, this is what drives the story is it's a brilliant family drama.
Yes.
Which happens to have, it's that thing we talk about with The Descent where you take the monsters. I guess this needs the monsters, but even without it, you've still got like really good family stories going on about grief and all those sort of elements.
Yeah, I would argue you could take the monsters out because really, yes, they've used the monsters well in the monsters have created the inciting incident, which is the loss of their son.
Yeah.
But really, you could have a son die for any number of reasons, and that's still this wound this family is sharing, and basically... Mm-hmm. It gives the reason for all of their conflict and drama. And
I think the reason it nails the concept and also then the actual execution so well is because they take a concept, which is a high concept of this sound being dangerous, which is just fucking clever and very good for a horror movie.
Yeah.
They then take just the idea of a grief and a family and they're struggling. And then you're like, it ties into the concept because the family cannot communicate effectively anymore.
Yeah.
Like they can't talk.
Right.
They do sign language, which is good, but only gets you so far. They can't speak to one another. Like literally the problems they have are that they cannot speak and then the problems they have is that they cannot speak.
Yes, exactly right. Yeah.
It works so beautifully and so perfectly.
That's right. And again, like this is where taking that high concept, picking apart what is the actual theme of it, like what is the thematic threads that we can use in the dramatic story, and then making sure that it covers both sides of the story. Fucking amazing, honestly.
Tight 90. And I mean, it really does fly.
Mm.
Yeah.
But it's amazing when you remove, like we talk a lot when we consume movies, you want to, you know, show, don't tell. And basically the entire film is that.
Yeah.
And the fact that they pull it off is really, I'm kind of blown away by it.
Yeah. I mean,
this is one of the best movies we've watched for this show. I really love it. I think I've watched it 3 times now.
Yeah.
And I'll happily rewatch this. I love it so much.
Couldn't agree more, dude. Like, even though I was on this rewatch, that opening act is almost perfection itself. Like, it is literally like, hey, here's what we're capable of, and then we're going to spend the next 80 minutes showing you that we can really pull it off. Like, it sets up the world, it sets up the characters, it sets up the threat so well. Like, it is so tense, even though we don't see the monster right until the very end.
Mm.
And even then, we do see the monster, and it's, if anything, it just makes it a bit more terrifying because the appearance of the monster isn't terrifying. It's the fact that it might see you. Like, it's a real reversal there.
We get a decent look at it in that first sequence.
Yeah.
Very early.
Like, it's a pretty quick look, but, you know, it's a lot of films would hide that until the end.
Mm.
This reminded me a bit of Signs, because it is that sort of alien monster threat to a certain extent. It's a family on a farm.
Sure. Yeah.
But where it excels, where Signs fell apart, is when you actually get that prolonged look at the monster at the end. I think the design of it is fucking incredible, to be honest. The close-ups of the ear and like the inner workings of that, it's like it would have been so easy. This is a low-budget film, obviously. You can just tell by looking at it. They've put the exact right amount into that design because it looks incredible.
Yes, yeah. And even the ear itself obviously is phenomenal. But
the shell on its head being able to like pop out and move, and yeah,
it's so grotesque. Like, even when the ringing from the cochlear implant is making it spasm, like it's almost more grotesque in that moment, you know?
Yeah,
it's one of those things where you get lots of prolonged looks at it at various points in the film, but they don't show you heaps.
Yeah,
like you don't really get the really good looks at its ears and its head until like the last third of the film, really.
Yep.
For the most part, you kind of get, you see the flash at the start, then you don't see anything for ages, but you know what they are.
Exactly, yeah.
And you know that if you make a sound, you are dead.
Yeah.
So, you know, you don't need to show us it again. They don't do that thing which I think Signs does in the back half where they show it to you and then they just keep showing it to you for a while.
Right.
Like, they do some nice creative things with it in that movie with the sort of TV reflection, but after a while you have just been looking at it for ages. These things are either constantly moving or are shown. Like, even that sequence with the flooding basement and the baby's bassinet is floating.
Yeah, yeah.
That creature's in the corner for ages.
Right. Yeah.
But but you don't care that you're seeing it because you're not focusing on that. You're like, that baby doesn't have a lid on it.
Yeah.
One. Two, it's a baby. It's going to cry.
Yeah.
There's water. You can't move quietly through water. There are so many, so many fucking stressful problems in that movie. Which brings me to the next point about why it's so really well done is, not only is it full of heart and great characters and a great concept and all this great stuff working together, it is the tensest 90 minutes of all fucking time.
Yeah.
You watch this movie, you can't shit for 2 days.
Did you see it in a cinema?
Your body is so clenched.
Did we all see it in a cinema originally?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like, normally when I'm watching a movie, I feel awkward eating snacks. I wait for like an action scene. This movie was off its dick. I was like, why did I even bother buying popcorn?
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't feel like I could eat it.
Well, that actually brings me to a good fun fact, which is that although the film was definitely a box office success, movie theater businesses were not enthusiastic about it for the exact reason that you're saying, which is that many audience screenings grew so quiet that they didn't want to buy stuff from the concession stands. They didn't want to eat food or anything during it. And so there was a notable loss of income for the movie theaters.
I love that. For anyone who doesn't know, the theaters make pretty much all their money from the concession stand rather than the actual film.
That's it.
So yeah, they would be fucking livid.
Yeah. And that's the thing.
I love that.
Even like watching this movie again, like, I don't know if you guys found this. I 100% reckon you did. Afterwards, you are talking so softly. Like, you just...
Yeah.
And you're kind of like... You're moving slower and I love the detail in the first half of the second act, where we're seeing the family go about their business and the details of all the little bits of like the felt board game, you know, that sort of thing, the sand that they walk on. There's all these great details that is there, like the one that got me this time on the rewatch was the painted on spots on the creaky floors where you can walk.
Yeah, I didn't notice that when I watched it before, but this time.
Yeah.
And on the stairs as well, so the stairs don't creak. Yeah.
Like, it's so thought out. And
that's the least of your problems walking on those stairs.
Oh, fucking hell, yeah. We'll get to that in a second. But yeah, the detail, this world was really, like, it was such a contained world, but they'd really thought it through and had some wonderful details. And then the performances were also fucking phenomenal. Emily Blunt is a jet. John Krasinski has never been better than in this movie, both in directing and acting.
Yeah.
And then the kids, the girl who plays Millicent, I can't remember her name, unfortunately. She's great.
I think that is Millicent Simmons, I think, is the actress.
Oh, okay. Yep. I've written Millicent down. Yeah, right. The character's name is Regan. And then even the kid, Marcus, Noah Jupe, he's phenomenal. I was watching his performance in this thing going, how do you know how to act that terrible? Like, especially because he's the fearful child, she's the angry child. Like,
yeah.
They're both... nail their performances.
Yeah.
Like, again, so much of this movie is empathy, all that tension comes from empathy with these characters that we almost immediately love, especially because, again, the high stakes of killing the youngest child who's cute as a button in the first 10 minutes, like, that is both brave and genius. Because it just sets the scene both for us as an audience in being afraid for them, but also empathizing with them.
Yep.
Fucking great. Yep.
What's your favorite scene?
Oh.
I got two.
Yeah.
I love the one where he's working away in his little basement thing.
Yep.
And she comes down and they had that dance scene together.
Right.
I love that because it's just like two grieving parents who are just like trying to deal together. And I just think it probably adds to it the fact that they're actually married in real life, but the performance, everything about that scene just works beautifully.
Yeah.
And the second one, the one I probably love the most, is right at the end when he signs to her that I have always loved you.
Oh, yeah.
It's powerful, Sean.
That's one of the most powerful things I've ever seen in cinema. And I read that it originally was just in the script as I love you, and the actress came up to John Krasinski and suggested, make it I've always loved you.
Yeah.
And he just started crying. He was like, we've got to do that. And it's beautiful. Like, that actually makes it so much better.
Because it's not that I love you because I'm dying. It's that...
Yeah.
The entire time, I've never thought it was your fault.
Yeah.
I've never hated you, ever. And it ties in beautifully with that conversation he has with the son earlier at the waterfall, where he's like, tells him that, and the son's like, well, you need to tell her that.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't believe it.
But isn't it great how they tie that all together at the end with just five words?
Yes, exactly
it
right.
It says so much more than the three words that it could have been. Like, it's so good.
That's it, exactly. If he just said, I love you, that's almost saying, I forgive you.
Yes.
Yep. Even though there's nothing to forgive. By saying, I've always loved you, he's saying, there is nothing to forgive. Yep. Like, the subtext is off its fucking dick, and I've never said that sentence before, but it so is.
But it's so well done. And even in that scene, like, it's such a beautiful moment too, because again, there's so much happening in this. You get that, and then you get the fact that Marcus, the cowardly brother, is the one who moves the car.
That's great.
He's the one who takes the action to get them back to the house. It's not the sister, because she's still caught on that moment. He's like, I've got to be the brave one.
Yeah.
I've got to get us out. I've got to save us.
But that comes back to earlier when he doesn't want to go out with the dad. And the mum's all like, you've got to learn these things because you've got to look after me. You've got to look after us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it works. The movie works on a lot of levels. It's beautiful.
It's fucking good. If I've picked my favorite scene, boys, it's... There's heaps of it. Those two are great. The birth scene is off its fucking head, but...
Oh, yeah.
The most intense scene in the whole movie is when they find the man in the woods and his wife's dead.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And he's choosing to kill him suicide by monster.
Yep.
And you can tell he's basically made the decision to do it, and then he sees them, and there's a moment where he's like, I can't, they're here, but also I'm done, I'm done.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
And the scrunched up face before he yells, and just the terror in John Krasinski's eyes where he's like, we're going to die.
Mm. How good is that conflict that you see within him? Like, his mouth's twitching because he's like, I have to do this, but I don't, like, they're going to get hurt, but I have to do it. Fuck it. I'm dead inside.
Yeah.
There's nothing left.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it. And like, that he doesn't want to lose his nerve in the moment because he's already committed to it. I wanted to talk about the sound in this movie because obviously the sound is incredible. Like, Sound of Metal does it really well because, again, you've got a deaf character. And this movie does it really well, because we've got a deaf character. And we going to her perspective, again, raises the stakes so high immediately because we realize how oblivious she is to those monsters approaching her. But it also just, it puts us so much into her mindset and her point of view. And it's also unsettling. Like, to have to cut from sound to nothing is just awful. And then I can't remember, I did have a fact about the amount of dialogue in this film, and I can't actually remember what it was.
It's 25 lines.
Fantastic. Thank you, Sean. That's insane.
Yeah, 25 lines of spoken dialogue.
Spoken dialogue.
Yeah.
Obviously, Jesus. Got the sign language.
Yeah. They weren't going to add subtitles for the sign language. And then I think they did, like, preview screenings, and there's the scene where the dad's trying to give her the new implant, and she's getting angry because she says it never works.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, no, we... Because most of the other interactions you can kind of put together with context, but when it's like an extended scene like that, you're like, no, we need to sort of hear what's going on.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it just looks like she's saying, fuck you for giving me implants.
Yes. Right. Yeah.
The other beautiful moment is at the end, right towards the end, where they're huddling in the basement they run into the basement and she's allowed into the basement for the first time, and she sees all of the implants that he's been trying to fix.
Fantastic.
Huge.
And it's just like, he's just the last however many days it's been.
Mm.
And that's the other fucking incredible, like, I forgot watching the movie, like, A, how short it is, but also it takes place over the course of 48 hours.
Right.
Mm.
It's 2 days, really. It's like the first, like, early on is whatever, but over the actual core of the plot of the movie is a day and a night, and then another day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the whole plot of the film. And the first day, you only see them, like, their normal home life, and then the next day is the whole kind of day. Not quite in real time, but, you know, you see this sort of extended day.
Yeah.
I love the rocket scene as well, actually. Just, like, that's when it just sort of everything builds and the music kicks in and he's running with the shotgun and the fireworks are going off and it's like that's when
and
the movie
and she
just
screams
peaking.
In the bathtub.
Yeah, that's so good. Everything, every layer of the movie's working perfectly then.
Oh, this movie hums. Like it's almost a perfect piece of cinema in my mind. I was even I even had a note, which is again something I've only caught on the rewatch. So you mentioned they call the fireworks rockets. They don't call them fireworks. Likewise, the sun wants a spaceship. All of these are like things to get you off this broken planet. Like the subtext is so inbuilt in every little element. I'm so impressed by it. Like it's a near, and like, I know this script did sort of hang around. I don't know if it made it to the blacklist, but it did sort of hang around in like, oh, this is a good fucking script. It just needs the right people behind it for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously somehow Krasinski got on board. And even then, I think it was presented to Krasinski and he was like, oh, I don't really do horror. And then he read the script. He's like, yes, I will do horror and I will direct it.
Yeah.
And then basically Emily Blunt read it as well and said, great, I want to be in it too because this is a great fucking script.
Wasn't there that great story where and originally she's like, nah, I can't play your wife.
Mm.
That's too, I can't do it. Here's an actor you should consider. And then she read it on a plane. And when the plane landed, she rang him and was like, have you called so-and-so? And he's like, no, I'm about to. She's like, don't.
Yeah.
You fucking do.
Yeah. It's, oh, man, it just powerful works. Yeah. I love it so much. And then the other thing I want to talk about, which is the raising of the stakes. Like I'm always impressed when a movie does it. I think because in my own writing, it's a weakness where I don't always push it as hard as I can. This movie pushes it. Like straight away having a pregnant woman during a time where you can make zero sound is exceptional. And then obviously, yeah, she fucking steps on that nail and can't scream. Like even in the first scene when she literally is watching her baby boy die and you just see her hands over her mouth holding in a scream. Like that will never not be powerful for me.
Mm.
That a mother is watching her kid die and can't even let out a guttural scream. And then when the water comes in and it's like, you're like, okay, they've got safety. The basement is soundproofed. The baby's soundproofed. Okay, things are looking pretty good. No, the water starts flooding in. Like it really, at every single turn, it does not hold back. It goes for the next thing and the next thing.
Mm.
And it always works so well. Like it's always worth doing because then our characters have to elevate. They need to be better than the problem, which just fucking makes us love them. And I do. I love this family so much.
But then, and again, same raising of the stakes, just they do it so subtly, but all of a sudden, all of them are separated.
Mm.
You're just like, oh, none of them are where they're supposed to be.
Yeah, right. At very organic.
Like, they have all these, like, that's the great thing about the world building is they build these great systems and all these great ideas, and then all of them fail.
Yeah.
Just thinking, my girlfriend said the funniest thing when we watched this, because she watched it years ago, but had sort of forgotten the major beats of it. And we get to when the dad gets killed at the end, and she was like, she was very emotional. She's like, oh, I forgot that the dad died. Did that happen last time? I'm like, did that happen last time? What are you
Yeah, you've showed her the dead dad cut, which is, you know, when you set out to watch a movie, Sean's like, is there a movie version of this movie where maybe the dad is distant or dead?
Because that's my sweet spot. Well, I also wanted to talk about the Krasinski scream, as I'm calling it, because I think it could be up there with the Wilhelm scream. It is guttural. It is heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Like, the tenor is like, first of all, it's like a bit more deep, and then it goes high-pitched as his voice, like, breaks and cracks.
Yeah.
Fuck!
It's beautiful.
It's powerful.
This should have won an Oscar.
Did it get nominated for anything?
It wasn't for Best Picture. I will assume it was nominated for like sound and some technical stuff.
Sure. Yeah.
Surely.
Because I don't recognise horror. But honestly, it is it is an incredible film. It should have been. I mean, it's way better than like what year did it come out? Like if you ever look at like I'm assuming it came out the year that Green Book came out and that movie absolutely sucked shit. So
might have been the year after that.
It was 2018 that it came out.
No, I think that's Green Book.
Maybe. So it'd be the 2019 Oscars.
Green Book, same year.
Was it really? Yep. Mm. Well, there you go. I mean, the Oscars are full of shit.
Yeah.
Unless we win one and then they're okay.
No, still full of shit. We just own a shitty award now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I just quickly want to talk, before we move on, I just quickly also want to talk about the ending because, again, something on this rewatch that came to me was how subtly and perfectly they laid in the road to victory.
Yeah.
Because this movie's so good, you're almost not even thinking about it. You're just surviving. You're just impressed by the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. So that when the cochlear implant comes in and she manages to amplify, you're like, oh, fuck, of course, yes. Like, it was like, it was there. It wasn't like so subtle that you're like, oh, I didn't even see it coming at all. But I almost forgot about it because I was just engaged so much. And then when it came through, it really did hit me as exactly what it's meant to do, that glimmer of hope.
Yeah.
That normally it's a glimmer of hope for the audience, but any well-trained cinema goer can be like, oh, okay, that's going to come in at the second act turn. Great.
Yeah.
But for this one, I almost didn't, because it's just, there's so much else going on and it comes through so organically and so perfectly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so nice. Like the fact, again, the movie ends with like, there's a lot, this is the thing. There is a lot of bleak. It's a very tense film. It is, you don't get a chance to breathe very much. And there's a lot of bleak shit happening in this movie. A kid dies in the first, like, fucking 10 fucking seconds, you know? Yeah. Like, your dad dies, that old man, it's bleak the whole way through. Yeah. To end on that final, like, shot of her relief, and she cocks the shotgun, and it's so loud.
Yeah.
And you're like, good.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Maybe, we don't, okay, there's a sequel. But at the time it came out, you didn't know there was going to be a sequel. So it's like, they may not survive this, but they're going to give it a red hot go, and that's what I want out of my horror.
Oh, fuck yes. Yeah. My heart exploded. There are some fucking terrific action movies out there. I don't know if any of them have managed to affect me the way Emily Blunt cocking that shotgun does. Like, I'm fucking jazzed. Like, and it's also just so, it's such a release as well, I think, that finally we've got some firepower against these fucking things. Like,
yeah.
And they work together.
Yeah, exactly right. And that's exactly what it is. It's just, it's the culmination of everything we've had in this, across this whole movie. And even then, it's not done to be like this giant action scene. It's not like this fucking cut in and she's looking like a badass warrior. She's looking like a mum who's cocking a shotgun and is the most sure of herself in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But that is exactly what that moment needs, and it fucking, man, jazzed is the term I would use.
This horror movie made me feel jazzed.
I was jazzed, baby.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, let's get into the horror side of it. So, were we scared?
Heaps.
Oh my God, so much.
Yeah.
Fucked.
Yeah.
Scariest bit is the one you mentioned before, Tom, I think, for me, is just that shot of the kid walking in the forest, and then you just see out of focus something, and your heart fucking stops, and then you just see the old man. Like, that's terrifying, that scene. And the kid, you talked to Damo about his acting. He fucking sells the fear so much. It's just great.
It blows me away, honestly. Like, he's got so much going on in his face. Like, I generally don't even know how he did it. Like, unless this kid is just a genuinely fearful kid, in which case, yeah, I relate to you, dude.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he is, like, and even when, at the waterfall scene, when he is so scared and Krasinski's trying to, like, convince him it's okay, you know, we've got the white noise, we've got the waterfall, and, like, he's a rabbit ready to run. Like, it's fucking perfection.
Yeah. Oh, that's another thing I love. They give you the waterfall thing and it just sets up perfectly what they're going to do with the fireworks when the mum's giving birth to the kid.
Yep.
Like, it's exactly just great.
Yep. And again, when the water's flooding and she moves behind that
that
tiny temporary waterfall.
Yep.
So good, dude.
Whereas I think a lesser film would just do that and you'd be like, oh, that's a bit dumb. But no, it works because they've given you the rules of the world. It's fantastic. Exactly. That scene you just mentioned, that is another horrifying one.
Ugh.
When you see it there in the basement and then it goes underwater and you're just like, oh, fuck off.
That duck dive, it immediately goes underwater. So you're like, oh, this thing's going to do fine underwater.
Oh, and then it just, its face just comes up right in front of the crib and you're just like, this movie, fucking hell.
It's fucked.
Yeah.
It's fucked.
And on top of that is the fear of Regan, right? I didn't think about it in the moment, but it's one of those ones you think about more after the film, and it's quite scary. Imagine living in that world where sound gets you killed, and you have no idea how loud you are.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yep. Like, she's just walking along, and for all we know, she's just, like, stomping along. Like,
how do you teach a kid who cannot hear how to be quiet?
Yeah, right. That's fucked.
Who doesn't have
that's
a fucked. Concept of what quiet is. Like, quiet is just, that's just my life.
Yeah. Yep.
But I assume everything's quiet. And it's used so effectively so many times, like that tension and awful moment where she's in the cornfield and it's just behind her.
Yeah, that's the one.
It's like she's like thankfully not being very loud, but like, you know, and when her brother falls into the grain silo and she has no idea because she's got her back to him.
Right.
Like they use it so effectively for dread. And that's the thing is you can't, this movie does not let you relax from the minute it starts. Mm-hmm. Until Emily Blunt cocks that shotgun. The reason that feels so powerful, I think, Damo, for you is you relax. The minute she pumps that gun, your body relaxes.
Yeah.
Your muscles will unclench.
You exhale for the first time in 90 minutes. You should have passed out fucking 85 minutes ago.
Yeah, it's fucking terrifying. And like there's some jump scares, but it doesn't rely on them.
No,
it just relies on relentless tension.
Yeah.
Like I think the jump scares are all non-monster related.
Right. Yeah, I think it's like,
as far as I'm aware,
animals landing in front of the window when he's looking out and things like that.
Yeah.
And just sudden sounds. Like, I think the first time a sound really belts you is when they knock over the lantern when they're playing Monopoly or whatever it is. The sound design, like, they've obviously turned it way up.
Yeah, they have. Yeah. And it's so effective. Like, and then even then, because silence becomes scary because of what's going to break that silence, you know? Fucking amazing. Well, another scene I wanted to talk about on the Were We Scared was that silo scene, because that, again, there is multiple layers of terrifying in that scene, in that one, we're waiting for Dad to get to them, but that's going to take fucking ages. They are literally drowning in grain, in corn, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And Holly was telling me apparently that's very much a thing. There is a certain amount of people every year who basically die in grain silos or corn silos because, there's no air and they just fall straight through.
That takes you back to like a childhood fear that I think everyone who's our age had, which is quicksand.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Quicksand was going to be a massive problem in my mind as an adult.
Yeah.
I have encountered it never.
Yeah. So quicksand is corn.
Yeah. Apparently,
It's horrible. Like,
quick corn.
Yeah.
And again, and then, the monster's coming. They're being loud. The door almost fucking hits Noah, the kid. Like, it's just got so much going on in such a short time span where, again, you're like, how can this get worse? Oh, that's how it's going to get worse. Okay, great.
Yeah. And again, she's trying to tell him that the way you survive is you stay still. Like, don't, like, move slow. Don't move quick. But she's signing it to him and he's panicking and he cannot see.
Exactly, dude. Yeah.
So many things. Movie. Fuck. Leave some things for everybody else.
Yeah. All right, well, what about our characters? I think I already know the answer here, but did our characters act wisely or foolishly?
Boys, I feel like maybe this might shock you, and maybe Dad, Sean, and I are on the same thing, because I think our characters, while they do some incredible stuff, and they do some really good stuff.
The dumb as shit, Tom.
Dumb as shit.
Oh, get out. The app.
Dumb fucking idiots.
The boy.
How dare you.
Exhibit A.
The boy.
No, not the boy. Right. The boy's, look, the boy makes him, but he's a boy. Not his fault. Yeah. Not anyone's fault. The mistake is, right, they choose to have another baby in an environment where sound kills you.
Yep.
Don't bring a kid into that world.
I'm going to assume the kid's an accident.
The kid is so not an accident. I had the same thing. I even made a note. Yeah, crazy to have a baby. And I do agree with you.
They chose to do that?
They chose to do it.
Of course they did. They lost their son. They're hoping this will heal their family.
I think I can understand it from a grief point of view. But like, in the world that you live in, come on. Come on, Johnny boy.
Johnny K, pull out some.
Jeez. Put it away. Holster.
Holster that weapon.
Fuck, mate.
Yeah. I mean, look, you're not wrong. I will 100% give you that one. It is madness to have a baby in this fucking world.
Yeah.
But, I feel like I could at least empathize with why they did it, even if I don't agree with why they did it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. No, I understand it completely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Dumb as fucks on earth.
I think that the kid, when he's out after the rocket scene and he's in like the cornfield and he hears a sound and his instinct is to then run through the corn, it's like, come on, mate, just stand still. What are you fucking doing?
Yeah, look, you're right. And like moving through corn is...
That's the loudest thing that he could have done in that moment.
Corn's always the worst in horror films. It's just the fucking worst. It's never been a positive thing.
No character has ever entered a cornfield in a horror movie and had a good time.
Exactly right. Yeah.
It's a nightmare.
And then he does knock himself out. So I guess I've got to give you that one too.
That's the movie being like karma for being a dumb fuck.
And then look, baby boy also grabbing the batteries. Come on.
So that's a parenting fault. because they tell him off, they defuse the situation, and then literally every member of that family leaves the shop and lets the kid leave last. What do you think he's going to fucking do? Krasinski should have grabbed that. He should have put the batteries in his pocket or something. Mm. Take the batteries out of the equation. Oh, I think it's the dad's fault, to be honest.
Okay.
I think he knows that it's his fault.
Yeah.
That's what I get from watching the movie.
Well, the beauty is literally everyone blames themselves for it. We see, like, literally see Emily Blunt's character say, I could have been holding him. I had the bag on, but my arms were free.
Yeah.
Obviously, the daughter feels guilty because she gave him the thing after dad said no. Yeah, I think you're right. Dad feels guilty.
I think the son probably feels guilty too, because I think he was sick, so he was being carried, and he's like, your dad wasn't carrying me.
Well, he's the reason they go to the shop in the first place.
Yep. So everyone's got guilt.
Yeah.
But I do think it's the dad's... Well, it's both parents' fault. Like, you should just not... You should have... Or one, the parent should be walking at the rear of the group.
Yeah.
Like one of the parents. Just don't let the kid... Like, don't leave the kid as the last one in the shop with the batteries. Oh. Mm-hmm.
Or even the last... If you're walking through a monster-infested monster land...
Yeah.
Don't have him at the back.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Even if you put the elder sister at the back, because she's a bit more responsible, right? Put him... Don't put him on the periphery.
Yeah, because they're not looking back enough. I think he's 4 years old.
Yeah, he's four.
What's to stop him just wandering off or do it? Like, you know what I mean? He doesn't understand the situation yet. He does to some extent, but yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I honestly can't believe it. It's such a failing of the parents.
But again, I guess, like, we need that to then
drama. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know who is the cleverest man in the movie? Mm. Old man.
Yeah, just kill yourself.
Who kills
he's ready to go, and he's just like, I'm going to yell.
Yeah.
All right. Well, boys, how would we deal with this situation?
Oh, we are so dead.
I'm dead. I'm dead first. I'll tell you why.
Okay.
My girlfriend, for the entire time I've known her, has had a bad cough. She'll cough and we'll just die.
Oh, my God.
And on top of that, my dog, he'll just bark.
Yeah.
So, like, honestly, I was watching this film and I had this thought where I'm like, my God, in order to survive, I have to, like, abandon my dog.
You have to abandon.
So it can't happen. Therefore, I die very quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I'm dead very quick too, just because I am an obnoxiously loud person, just in general. But also, the main thing is, like, here's a question for you. In the Quiet Place universe, what if you get the runs?
Ooh, oh, yeah.
Shit. What if you have to do a monster shit? What do? Do you just shit your pants because it's quieter, I guess? I don't fucking know. Do you shit into a pillow? Yeah. Like, how do you stop a noisy shit?
Go even just one more back. Just a fart.
Yeah.
What if you just got a big old fart brewing? Yeah. I think you need a pillow to muffle.
Yeah.
Imagine that. What happened to Tom? he farted.
Huge chance. Huge chance. But I'd forget and like I'm pretty good at being quiet, but I'm also one of those people that like gets the giggles when I have to be quiet. So like I'd see a duck fall over, giggle and die.
Yeah, that's your dad. Yeah.
I either giggle or fart and I'm dead.
I mean, also we're in the city. Like, is it easier to defend yourself and to create a bit of a space when you're out on a farm? Although the city is louder, there's more distractions here. Are we probably capable of, like, bunkering down better? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, here's my thinking on it. So I could see one clear way to keep living. I don't know if it's necessarily practical, but, like, clearly if you live behind a waterfall, you're basically always safe. Like, you've got a steady stream of white noise.
Mm. Okay.
So that's my thing, is that we need to get to even like a babbling brook of some kind. So at least we can whisper to each other. Tom can have a cheeky little fart, a little squeaker, nothing too big, you know.
Just going for a walk to do. And if you need to do a big one, go to the waterfall.
Right. I'll just get in the water and fart in the water. My thinking was like, cool. Is there a way you could live near, super close to the water, so it's kind of always blanketing your sound?
Yeah. I wonder, you don't get a sense of the larger world in this. I think he tries to, you know, radio into certain things.
Mm.
But, like, would it be a situation where the army could, like, centralize a lot of noise, attract all the creatures there, and then just bomb them?
Oh, that's
so good. Maybe, like, maybe living in the city's a good thing, because maybe they'll fix the cities first, and it's just, like, the farm people that are copping the dregs of the alien race at the end of this thing.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I reckon, though, the issue is the military mobilizing. Mm. Make noise.
Yeah, they probably got wiped out.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll find out in the sequel, I guess. But I'm curious to see what's happening in the larger world.
For sure. Like, even, like, the very first scene that we see, where obviously already it's deserted, is day 89.
Yeah.
All it's taken is 3 short months and things have fucked. And like, probably. Like, that's probably true.
Mm.
So if we can survive past day 89, if we can find some place to bunker down, I think that's about as good as, like, again, I guess we've got to give ourselves the same chance as these characters.
If we go to somewhere by the sea, by the ocean. Ooh, like a lighthouse. Yes. Roaring winds, crashing waves.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm liking this. Yeah.
Yeah. You got to get there, though.
Yeah, that's the problem.
So if there was a Quiet Place movie about the three of us, it'll be getting to like the Round the Twist lighthouse. that's our journey.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a long way.
You just got to set like a news alert on your phone and then like the first hint of anything bad in the car to the lighthouse.
No, not the car.
No.
Car makes noise.
Yeah.
What if you're driving and it happens?
How quick are they? They're pretty quick.
They're pretty fucking quick. Yeah. Yeah. And then the other thought I had was they know there's three of them in the area. Like that's on one of his maps in the background. Do you just fucking go, let's set a trap? Like, is there a way to trap and kill these things? Like, obviously, you know, you've got the bait, make some fucking noise.
Yeah.
So like, is there a point there where you could potentially set up a thing that would actually kill them?
I think you would get to that point, wouldn't you? Like if you're Johnny Boy, they have that nice scene, you know, the lighting of the beacons type thing.
Yeah, it's nice, yeah.
Would you try and venture out to these other people's properties and try and sort of come up with some sort of plan or?
Yeah, like if you have like a little fucking creepy wind up clapping monkey toy or something like that, right?
Yeah.
Well, they've got the egg timer that they use specifically for that.
Yeah, beautiful. So yeah, the egg timer. And then like, yeah, either you're surrounded with guns or you literally have like a trap that falls on it. I don't know. Like obviously they can literally cut through metal. So that is tough. Like he jumps out of the silo. The thing cuts through the silo.
Johnny Boy's pretty crafty. I think he could make a bomb of some sort.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just like set up a thing that'll just blow up.
Yeah. And I mean, we couldn't.
No, well.
The three of us are fucked.
Yeah, I still think we're dead.
Yeah, there's no way we survive beyond a couple of hours.
Well, I like the ocean thing. If we, look, maybe we're at the island when this all kicks off.
Well, we need to just move.
Yeah.
We need to take preemptive action and probably move into that location already just so we're ready.
Yeah. Should we do that now? This weekend,
we probably should.
Just in case.
Yeah. Do you reckon these things can swim?
Oh, fuck, they do swim. We saw it duck dive into the fucking water.
Oh, yeah, it can.
They are so good at swimming.
Oh, we're fucked.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, dead.
I think we're fucked.
Yeah. Tom's going to fart. We're all die. That's us.
Oh, shit. Tom's favourite food, Rogan Josh. He's just going to be shitting and shitting and we're going to be getting cut in half.
Tom's going to be like smashing Rogan Josh. We're going to be like, Tom, you need to stop.
Yeah, also the most effective weapon seems to be, you know, like a shotgun. And right. In Australia, we don't really have access to firearms.
No. So. I think I just honestly do not see us. We don't go to day 89. We're lucky to get to hour 89.
Yeah. This is very true.
Yeah, we would die. We would die going to Coles to get some food.
If you're eating a bag of chips at the moment, they happen to be out and about. You're fucking cooked. Like,
oh yeah, think of all the food you couldn't eat anymore.
Yeah, I love crunchy food.
Mate, I love iceberg lettuce.
Here's the thing, right? Imagine you're eating a packet of chips and you find out it happens. So you freeze and you're like, I won't eat these chips, but the bag's open in front of you, you can smell it. So you're like, maybe I'll be really quiet with this chip.
Just one.
Just one. Just I won't make much noise. Dead.
I love that in this scenario, the three of us are the four-year-old boy.
Yeah.
Well, that is all the Scaredy Talk we have for this episode. I've been David.
I've been Sean.
I've been Tom.
And if you Scaredy listeners would like to contact us and tell us how you'd survive this terrible apocalypse, you can email us at 3scaredboys@gmail.com or you can find us on Twitter at Scaredy Boys. Or individually, I'm at Midday Pajamas.
I'm at Carney from 55.
And I'm at Awkward Treed.
Stay scared, everyone. That was jazz, baby.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.